couple of weeks ago, if you listen to the program, you notice that I would sneak in a cut in the last two or three programs of a brand new band out of Philadelphia. Their name is Man About a Horse. And it just kind of, we had to make some phone calls, but we needed to get a hold of them right away because I really liked the music. And in between the time that they sort of appeared out of nowhere, their album, Man About a Horse, self-titled, debuted, mind you, debuted at number 11 on the Bluegrass Billboard chart, which, my friends, is unheard of. So what we're going to have in the second hour of the show, three of the members of Man About a Horse, as many of them as we could fit in a phone booth in Philadelphia, which is where they're based. There are five members in the band, Matt Thomas on double bass, Matt Roy Royals on guitar, Dan Whitener on banjo, Elizabeth Carlson, fiddle and violin, Nate Lanzino on mandolin. We have Matt, Roy, and Dan on the program in the second hour to talk about the band, how they got together, and really it's a stunning achievement to debut. Brand new band, first album ever, debuts, number 11 on the Billboard Bluegrass chart. I don't remember it happening in a long, long time. I can't remember it happening specifically either for any band that just opens up and throws out an album on any chart to open up at 11. They deserve it, I think. Great new album, great sound, great approach to music. We'll talk about the diversity that they bring to the music and the skill level that they bring. We'll have as many of them as we could fit in a phone booth in Philadelphia, and I know there are still phone booths somewhere in Philadelphia. I have a lot of friends there. They can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of what we did. I'm very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass members of the band Man About a Horse, and I have on the phone, I believe, Matt Thomas, Dan Whitener, and Roy Royals. Do I have that correct?
You got it.
All right.
We're all here.
All right, good. Well, listen, I'm really happy to have a chance to speak with you guys. I saw the music pop. I immediately found it right away, contacted you about let's doing this. The new album, is this your first album of this length? I have 10 songs on it, and it's named after the band Man About a Horse. Is this the first album really a serious consequence from this band?
Serious consequence might be an overstatement. It's definitely the first full-length album.
Okay, good. Good. And please, anybody speak up when you want. I'm very informal. I just kind of get information as we go, and we'll cover everything, I promise, as we go. But I've given a good several listens to the album, and I really like what music you're putting out. I like the songs that you're selecting. I'll go ahead and throw in the spoiler alert right now. The last tune on the album is from Radiohead, which I think is phenomenal that you're choosing those sources. But I don't know anything about the band other than that you're, at least the information I have is you're Philadelphia based. That could be true or not true. Just could be where you are now. But let's you guys take turns and tell me a little bit about influences on the band members as you are, because I want to pull some of this out as we go through the songs and how you got together. That's kind of a vague question, but you can take it from there.
Yeah, sure. Well, this is Matt, and Roy and I started the band about 4 years ago. We used to be neighbors here in Philadelphia, and I was learning mandolin at the time. I've been playing bass most of my life at this point, but I was learning mandolin, and I found out that he was a bluegrass guitar player, and I thought the likelihood of two aspiring bluegrass musicians living next door to each other in Philadelphia was pretty slim. So we made plans to get together and do a little picking, and brought a banjo playing friend of mine along as well, and that's really where the band started. You know, it was kind of an excuse for me to get better at mandolin, and now I am the bass player for the band. So
the mando's a nice thing to fall back on, but you wound up with the upright.
Yeah, well, I have fallen back on a mandolin, okay. And it broke, so I wouldn't say it's that good of a thing to fall back on.
By the way, don't think that I didn't pick up on your bass solo, and I'll tell you right where it is. It's in the middle of Lady Rain. There's a bass solo. And I thought,
that's it. There it is.
Just in case you thought, yeah, I don't listen to these things, I do.
You know, for me, I play a solo the entire time.
That's true.
Other people just play over
All right. Okay. Dan, we've crossed paths before. And fill in a little bit, Dan Whitener, about your introduction with these guys. And I know there's other members of the band. We'll talk about them also. But for what we have on the phone right now, Dan, can you catch up a little bit to that story?
Sure, absolutely. So a little after, I think about a year into this band's existence, I crossed paths with them. They were coming up on a tour of the New York area, and they were up at the Jalopy venue up in Brooklyn. And I think I was in Brooklyn for something else that same day. So I came by, saw them, and I'd heard that they were that their banjo player was heading off to Guatemala. And so I took a listen, and I really liked what they were doing. So I got in on it, and shortly after I joined, and they had been doing some Gloria Gaynor, they'd been doing some I Will Survive, some covers like that, and I had already got it into my head that I would love to do the song I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston.
Okay.
And I just wanted to do it. I thought it would be a lot of fun, so I mentioned to them, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. I think that's about when they said, I think we've found our band player. It's been working out really well ever since. I'm very happy to be involved with this group.
I like that. I like that way of connecting. By the way, none of those songs you just mentioned are on this album, but we have a lot to talk about. But I like the fact that that song alone pulled you three together, because you must have found like-mindedness among the hive mentality that you were putting together at the time for Man About a Horse. I like that.
Absolutely.
All right, so you have a band. This is an album that you just put out. I just got my hands on it. You have to have a website. I want to make sure we don't, before we get into the songs, people can probably find out where you're going to be. If you're touring, they can probably find out how to get a hold of the new Man About a Horse album. Let's get that out of the way right first, then I want to talk about the other members of the band on this album, then we'll get into the music itself.
Well, this is Roy. We have a very unique website address. I think we're probably one of the first groups to get an address with the .horse domain. And so you can actually find us online. It's manabout.horse.
Yeah, we're really ahead of the curve on that one. I think eventually the bluegrass world will really get turned on to that. But for now, it's mostly all us.
I'll say it again, because I was kind of laughing a little bit, but I want to hear the full thing again so I don't laugh over it.
So there is, it turns out, instead of the .com,
yeah,
there is a .horse ending, which I think is really the purpose of it is for perhaps for horse enthusiasts.
You think?
Or horse owners. it fits too well with our band name to not use that as our website address. So,
okay.
You can just go to www.manabout.horse.
And on that place, they can find out where you're going to be. They can find out how to get a hold of this album. Am I correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, that's got our tour schedule on there, and I think you can even stream the album right on the website there.
Okay.
If you want to give it a listen.
Very good. We were talking a little bit before we went on the air. There are 10 cuts on this album. And the first one is, and there are some things that I would say without fear of going out of my way to pigeonhole things, there are some that are very directly easily transferable into what, not necessarily my audience, because I play all kinds of music, but a traditional bluegrass fan would immediately identify some of these songs. But you also kind of pull from so many different sources. I kind of want to know from you what the sources are from the songs, not just the ones that you've borrowed from other writers, but the stuff that you write. Where are you pulling these from? Because they're very different.
Sure. Roy, do you want to start? Or?
Yeah, I mean, when you say where are we pulling them from, do you mean sort of musical inspiration?
Yes, your inspiration, yeah.
I mean, it's a great question. I think I'm probably, this is Roy again, I probably am the least sort of steeped in the bluegrass tradition. I come from a lot of different influences, but I first was kind of, I would say, exposed to it when I was a kid and heard Bela Fleck music. And that sort of set me down the path of learning about this kind of music. So I've always kind of been aware of it for a long time. But it's really just, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 years since I've been involved with this group that I've really kind of gotten deeper into the bluegrass catalog. I'm a big fan of jazz music. And,
oh, good.
So there's that, and I like a lot of Latin music. And so it's really kind of, I'd say, a diverse. And pop music, really. I think we're all kind of pop music fans. And I think you mentioned that we have some covers that you wouldn't necessarily associate with bluegrass music.
So I think we come at it with a really kind of, you know, open mind about what can fit into this style of music. But at the same time, I think we are, you know, as you mentioned, going for what you might call a real bluegrass sound. We really want that. We really like bluegrass and that driving feel that that really kind of characterizes the genre.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we want songs that are, you know, you want to sing along with and that, you know, could be played on the radio and that could be accessible to people that might not be, you know, as steeped in the tradition. And that's partly, I think, sort of where I'm, at least where I'm coming at it when I'm writing these songs.
Okay.
Absolutely. And this is Dan. And I have, I think, a very similar mentality to that. With us as a band, I mean, I play the banjo in this band, and a lot of the time I feel like, you know, not to get too into labels, but, you know, if it's bluegrass, it has a banjo, or if it has a banjo, that's what identifies it as bluegrass.
Yeah.
There can be so many other influences. I mean, bluegrass as a genre, you have blues coming into it.
Absolutely.
And folk. And now people start talking about roots and Americana and all these different things that go into it. And I think, you know, I've listened to a bunch of those different things growing up. And so I think a lot of that makes its way into my songwriting unconsciously. But then consciously, too, you know, we'll sit down and try to write songs sometimes with a particular purpose in mind. You know, like I wrote You Can Never Go Home Again about recidivism because I felt really bad about it and I wanted to address it in a song. And then Roy sat down to write Frankfurt Junction, and it's a funny story, tragically funny, but Roy sat down to write it originally about the historic train crash that occurred at that site. And then more recently there was another train crash, and so it ended up, didn't you end up sort of modernizing it and changing it around a little bit to fit the newer crash?
there are two versions of that song, actually. We played it one way for a while, which was about the train crash from that happened on the same curve in Philadelphia right after World War II. And then right before we went to the studio, I just felt the need to update it and modernize it to be about the more recent train crash. I think for me that comes out of, I really am fascinated by, in the bluegrass genre, sometimes the use of a song as a vehicle to tell a story that's, a true news story and sort of let it be sort of about that. And so I was sort of trying to play with that idea in writing that song.
Well,
yeah. And that even can apply to our covers. You know, we have a couple of fun covers that we like to play live. Not a lot of them made it onto the album. But the Radiohead song in particular, Electioneering, we had actually started playing that. We were involved with a Radiohead cover tribute project. And so we were listening to a couple of different songs, and we decided on this one. And then we started playing it more often around November.
Yes.
And you know, we didn't write that song, but we really appreciate playing it. I think it has a lot of contemporary relevance to us.
I think so, without a doubt. Without a doubt. What other influences? And this is, by the way, what I expected. You're not surprising me because when I listen to the music, I know that I'm going to get these answers that I'm getting. And I don't need you to say, and don't want you to say, well, I was steeped in bluegrass. I don't need that. I know you're here. You're in an area now that can be loosely identified as bluegrass. It doesn't even have to be to me. It's great music. You guys are great musicians. Your vocals are good. But I like to know these influences that are brought into the band from people who maybe aren't raised in. I wasn't raised. I listen to jazz. I have a jazz radio show. I do, you know. So I like the fact that you're pulling in other influences, and then it comes out this way, which I just think is fascinating.
Maybe I should amend that. This is Dan again. I did grow up in the classic bluegrass hometown of Washington D.C., which used to have a bunch of really good artists.
Absolutely.
Out there. And I grew up listening to my dad play mandolin and guitar mm-hmm. and all of that. So I guess it would be disingenuous of me to not admit that I was pretty much steeped in it.
You know, I'm not. I don't do any.
All those other things.
I don't do any fact-checking, all right? We're just talking here. I'm not going to track out where you grew up and did you listen to this album scene and all, everything. It was a heavy bluegrass scene in the Washington area, and I even know why, but we won't get into it. I know how it happened because one of the first things I did on the show was figure out why that occurred, and everybody there has explained it to me now. There are a lot of great – I don't mean to cut anybody off, any other influences into the band that I did not get into.
I would just say I think one of the big things in the overall, like, what do we want to sound like as a band is that it's really important to me to keep things acoustic. And even though we, you know, Dan will use a phaser, a flanger, one of those guitar pedals on his banjo, you know, I think one of the fun challenges is to take, like, a Radiohead song, especially one that's as, like, guitar, you know, distortion-driven
and
all these crazy things going on, and like, all right, how does that translate to just, you know, strings and wood? And you know, like, we have in the middle of the song, we use the mandolin and the guitar just like muted strumming to like
sustain,
simulate
yeah.
the snare fill, you
mm-hmm.
know. So that's, I think that's one of the real fun parts of playing this sort of stuff is just how do we get as many sounds out of these instruments without cheating? And even like the some of the stuff on the album that sounds really strange is all like post-production effects, and a lot of that was analog, you know, physical tape delays and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's like giving ourselves this framework and setting these limitations and like forcing ourselves to get creative with it.
There are some sort of expansive, and I like the fact that there's some of the banjo. There was a banjo solo in Grieve, Cry, and Moan that I actually made a note that it was kind of a little bit expansive, and by that I mean a little bit freer sounding than a lot of banjo solos might have been. And I like that. I like the fact that there's some fiddle stuff that gets very in the middle of some of the things, and even the bass. Yes, there's some pretty interesting bass stuff. I like the fact that you guys kind of take a little ride every once in a while. Not, you don't leave the context of the song or the music at all, but you're also sort of you're not afraid to be out there and then come back and bring it back to the song, which, and you've always maintained the song itself, but there's some playing in here that I can see you guys doing some really, I'll tell you what, a song that I thought is a perfect Lay My Head Down and Cry, I will bet you live that takes longer than 4 minutes and 46 seconds.
It'll take some time. Yeah, we spent a lot of time, you know, trying to have a conversation as a band and try to figure out, you know, how far and how out there, you know, how much of that we want to do. I think Liz, our fiddler, at one point she did the solo for, I think it was Electioneering,
mm-hmm.
and it really got to that place. And then after she tracked it, she sort of said that. I don't know, was that a little too out there? And we were all like, no.
No, it's perfect. No, it's perfect.
Out there. But just the fact that she was asking that question,
mm-hmm.
and I think we have that conversation pretty often when we're getting into how are we going to structure Grieve, Cry, and Moan. We're going to have, maybe we'll have a little jammy section, but it's not going to be 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, I think maybe that might be one label, you know, people talk about jam grand
yeah.
music. That's something we listen to, but I don't know if it's something that I would really describe what we do as, but we incorporate those elements.
Right.
So a song might take 5 or 6 minutes, but it's probably not going to be half an hour.
Well,
I mean,
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Oh, this is Matt, and I mean, I'm wearing a Grateful Dead t-shirt right now.
Okay, you know, good enough.
I grew up listening to that sort of stuff, and I think, you know, I always want to push things further. I think I might be the one in the band who would be most satisfied to play one chord for 10 minutes, you know. but I think, you know, I always say, like, I want to have this band sit at the cross section between, like, traditional bluegrass and, like, the jam grass and new grass sort of thing. Like, I don't want it to be easy to put us in any particular corner. I kind of want to dabble a little bit in all of those areas. Because it's, you know,
you can get
really
lost.
Satisfying, especially playing. It's really satisfying playing live and, like, you know, seeing seeing the crowd react to you, like balancing on that high wire where you're all kind of improvising at the same time and trying to figure out what's going on, you know, and I think that audiences really respond well to that, and it's just it's so much fun to do.
And I also think it's a personal taste issue with me, but you can get lost if you're extending a song twice as long as it should be just because you can and because you're on stage. You're going to eventually lose the track of what you're trying to have the conversation about, I think.
You know, and that's it definitely happens. Which is one of the reasons we don't do a lot of that live. Like, we'll, you know, an extended jam for us is maybe, what, an extra minute.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, I like it. I can sense there's a lot of structure, and I also know that from listening to the album, not having seen you live, that you have a lot of musical skill. We've talked about, you know, kind of how you arrived at these points and what you've taught yourself. But I do think the band, I love your vocals. Don't let me ignore the vocals. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of feeling in the vocals, whether it's a solo or harmony parts, really comes through. But I also think you're really good musicians. I'm not trying to surprise you, but I think you play really well, or else you would lose the context of what you're doing through some of these things because they are so out of the norm. But I do think you're good musicians. I think when I see you live, and I will at some point, I think I'll get that further into my head. But I do think you guys are good players.
Thank you.
Well, and I don't know if we said this, Steve, in the beginning, but we appreciate all of the kind words about the recording, and we're totally thrilled to be on the program here with you. You know, just given the incredible types of groups that you have on here. You said in the beginning you don't know us other than the fact that we're from Philadelphia. So we really do appreciate you taking the time with us, and for I'm glad you enjoyed the recording.
I did, and I know. Yeah, go ahead. I know you because I heard the music, and that's when I decided, as soon as I heard it, then I knew that I knew you enough to want to talk to you. And so I think I'm a pretty good judge of, and I've had all kinds of guests on this program. You can look at my unrealbluegrass.com, and you can see everybody's been on this show.
You were just mentioning, too, Rhonda Vincent and Mark Johnson and mm-hmm. Danny Barnes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just played a show, and I think it kind of it blows our minds sometimes because we were just at a show. We opened up at the Milk Boy in Philadelphia. Mm. Danny Barnes, Grant Gordy, and Joe Walsh.
Oh yeah. Oh God, I love it.
Jenny Lynn from Delamay.
Sure.
And it was just a tremendous night of some of the best, highest quality, bar none. I think I can just say highest quality music that you're going to find. And we were continually looking at them and saying, wow, this is great. These guys, you know, these are our heroes. And then we would sort of look at each other and ourselves and say, oh, okay, and we're on this show too.
Is that the coolest moment ever?
the coolest moment ever was after, you know, towards the end of the night, Dan and I are standing at the merch table and Danny Barnes walks over, and I got to watch Danny Barnes walk up and tell our Dan that he enjoyed his banjo playing, and then to watch our Dan's head just explode.
Yeah, I had to clean that up a little bit.
It was hilarious and beautiful.
Well, then you know Danny's been on the show twice, and I've met him a couple times, and he is every time he does something, it's different than the last time, and it's like nobody else, but his musicianship is unbelievable. Unbelievable what he does and what he puts into his music.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys too, and I think this is something that we really value, you know, because there's a lot of really intricate, amazing, talented instrumentalists out there, but you know the stuff that he does, he does like a scat singing with the banjo. I usually describe him to people as like a John Hartford.
Oh, I know.
He's certainly somebody that. I mean, John's somebody that I think everybody in this band, you know, really looks to as a great example of that free spirit, you know, a respect for tradition and the styles.
Absolutely.
But he was really just doing what he wanted to do, and so we're sitting there watching Danny do his, you know, his scat singing, and I figure, you know, I might try to do some of that too. The bar is raised, and you know, these great guys are emulating it.
I'll tell you what would be fun for you to do, and I don't get anything off of people going to my website. It's all free there. But if you go back, listen to both of Danny's interviews on this program, when the album he just put out and the one he put out the year before, where he played with no picks at all, and listen, because I ask him the same question about his influences, and Bill Frisell, he also has some Tex-Mex type accordion players, and it'll blow your mind. You need to go back. They're all available to listen to. I'm talking to members of Man About the Horse. I shouldn't be saying go listen to Danny Barnes, but since you brought it up, his influences are not unlike yours in that they're so diverse. I mean, he pulls in everything, and he can tell you why he loves Bill Frisell's guitar playing and why he loves this part of this particular accordion work, and he brings it all in and makes it his own. And I think that's what I get from listening to your music and talking to you also, that you all have different influences, and here you are, Man About a Horse, and it works very well for you.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the things that's very similar is, you know, Danny's out of Austin, which is a major hub, and with us being out of Philly is another obviously major hub. You know, we have all these diverse bands coming through. You know, there's just you can walk down the street in the summertime, and depending, you know, what neighborhoods you're going through and who has their windows open, you'll hear salsa, you'll hear country music in some parts of town, you'll hear a lot of hip hop, you'll hear a lot of rock and roll, and you know, like growing up around that, you're just you're bombarded with it. And
right.
So I guess our job is to take all of that and figure out how to put it into a string band.
A lot of soul, you know, but I'll tell you this, and I've listened to this album, maybe you do some mummer music somewhere, but I haven't heard it yet.
Not yet. That's too many notes for us.
Well, listen, I think we've hit the, I mean, the album is great. You have a lot of great songs. I don't want to keep you forever, but, you know, you do have the other one you said was Lady Rain was Hall & Oates. Now, that's clearly something you pulled from somewhere else, and I would say they're sort of like, that's certainly soul. They used to call them the second coming of Blue-Eyed Soul. So, I mean, so you guys definitely have a wide range, and you have a lot of heartbroken songs. And as I mentioned before we went on the air, no one dies as a result of the heartbreak as far as, you know, a protagonist going after and drowning someone. So I will look for that in your next album also. Those are great songs. They're really a great sentiment. But you left all that for the next time.
Exactly. We'll get darker for you, Steve.
All right, listen, guys.
You ask us what do you see in the band's future, and we'll try to work in more murder ballads.
Get some more murder ballads, and it'll change your whole gigging schedule around. Also, I bet if you can do some. I can't wait to see you guys live. I'm going to check your website. I go to Raleigh every year because I'm on the board of IBMA. Are you guys going down there for anything in that week of IBMA? I mean, if you are, I'll find you. But if not, I'll find you somewhere.
That's to be determined. I'm not sure if we're going to make it this year.
It's down the road.
You know, calendar for the fall.
You never know. Yeah. You never know. Those things pop up. I'm just saying that I'll keep a lookout for you. And Gray Fox and that are pretty much my big week events. But I'll find you popping. Or you'll probably come through. I live in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area. You'll probably buzz through here at some point, and I'll catch you at one of the local venues. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there one day.
You will. You will. Listen, I really appreciate it talking to members of Man About the Horse, Man About a Horse, not the Horse, Man About a Horse, Matt Thomas, Dan Whitener, and Roy Royals. It's been a blast, man. Thanks so much for being available. I just did ask you the other day, and you were already available. Thanks so much for being so patient. And I've never had a call-in interview yet where I had a PIN number. That's a first for me, so it's going down. It's every day I learn something new.
Such a pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I'll catch you down the road.
All right. Take care.
See you. Bye.